to make a request at the beginning, if I could, with regard to the dilemma of grading the course at the end. I would like if, first of all, those of you who are writing the weekly reflection papers, when you hand in the final reflection paper, if you would also give me a paragraph stating what grade you think would be fair and just for the course for you, and why. And under why, I would like such things as, well, what you've read, and the amount of, you know, energy and time and so on that the course has consumed, and that kind of indication or anything that would enter into that. So when you give me the final reflection paper, if it could be on a separate sheet, a paragraph or so, with an indication of what grade you think would be fair, and then we will negotiate from that point in terms of the grade. But give me the reasons why you regard that. Some people grade themselves too high and some people grade themselves too low, I find, when we do this. But at least it gives me a starting point for that. It's difficult, you know, to grade a course like this because most of the work has been personal reflection on your own experience. You don't... a grade is, in a sense, an inappropriate response to that. But it, under the conditions of educational insanity that we label under at times, it's the only thing to do. And those who are writing the lengthier reflection paper, when you hand that in, lengthier reflection paper or academic type paper, when you hand that in, if you could give me the same thing. And if I've worked out another arrangement with any one of you individually, get a paragraph to me sometime. Course before doomsday as a bonus. Any questions on that? Am I clear? Okay. The new material in the last class, I telescoped a lot from the outline and basically got through most of the material in number 9 on the outline, Jung and the Opposites. And I'm going to review that briefly today and then move on and see if we can't do both 10 and 11. In today's class and leave some comments for discernment for the next lecture. So the new material dealt with the dimension of Jungian psychology with which I have some serious difficulties, namely his treatment, Jung's treatment of the problem of evil, or the relationship of good and evil. I mentioned to a couple of people this morning, I would like to have had the time in the course to do a much more thorough discussion of Jungian psychology, but it simply has not been available to us. And so if you want to find out how I interpret Jung and where I would agree with him, I would recommend several possible articles, the 3 from Review for Religious being probably the clearest ones. But I just can't go in. I'd like to go through the whole thing, but I can't do it. So, the core of my difficulty then with Jung lies in his treatment of good and evil. That treatment has further implications in terms of his notion of God and the reconciliation of good and evil in God, and also in terms of his treatment of Christ and the symbolic significance of Christ for the Christian psyche. I think you can see the way in which those implications would develop out of his position on good and evil. Namely, that God also has a problem of coming to terms with his own evil. See? And that the God that Jung would posit is not the summum bonum, the highest good of the Christian tradition. But rather is a God who himself has to go through the process of reconciling good and evil. And then with regard to the question of Christ, there is the relationship of Christ and Satan as psychic images now, not so much as personal realities, but as psychic images. And somehow he wants to imply that as psychic images, they need one another. See, that they are complementary to each other in the way that contraries are complementary to each other. I would radically disagree with that. The only choice between Christ and Satan is the only issue there is one of choice and decision. That's what has been the case through the whole of the Christian tradition and my own spirituality. It's expressed in St. Ignatius' Meditation on the Two Standards in the spiritual exercises. It's one or the other. And he's calling you to choose for one or the other. It's not the reconciliation of the standard of Christ and the standard of Satan, as we'll see when we get into some discussion of discernment in the next class. Okay. I shared with you last week the orientation that I had with regard to the problem of evil when I came to the study of Jung. Well, I was convinced that the only resolution of the problem of evil has to be redemption, a divinely originated solution through which evil is transcended and its effects are converted into the source of good. And into the source of a greater good, where sin has abounded, grace has abounded even more. The good that comes out of God's upending of evil is a greater good. Felix culpa theology with regard to sin, the oh happy fault notion, that out of the human mystery of iniquity, God has brought this marvelous good. There is no natural solution, then, to the problem of evil in such a way that good and evil could be reconciled with each other by giving each one its due. They are not the same kind of opposites as our consciousness and the unconscious, matter, spirit, and then some of the others, too, that Jung talks about, thinking, feeling. Those don't cancel each other out. Each one is to be given its due, and one-sidedness develops if that is not the case. Sensation, intuition, these are all contrary. They are to be reconciled with each other by giving each one its proper place in one's life. Good and evil are not that way. There's not that kind of solution to the question of good and evil. They are not contraries, but contradictories. But Jung treats them as if they were the same kind of opposites as these. Treats them as though they were the same kind, and in fact would tend to identify evil with the area that remains in the dark. You would tend to identify evil with the unconscious. Part of his problem, then, is a linguistic problem of the way in which he's using the term evil. Because it is false, it's inaccurate to identify evil with the unconscious. It's quite false and a very dangerous thing to do. Once you identify evil with the unconscious, you come to hate your own unconscious. Or, if you come to the point of moral renunciation, then you simply abandon yourself to your own unconscious. And neither one of those, as we saw at the very beginning of the course, is the appropriate response to take to the darker side of myself. Either self-hatred or moral renunciation so that I give up responsibility for the darker side of myself. Neither one. So the dangerous consequences of the identification of evil and the unconscious. Am I clear on what I'm saying on this so far? Very dangerous consequences, many of which Jung himself would have violently disparaged. Many of the consequences that I think are drawn from his treatment of evil, he would not have approved of. So I think that's very important in all fairness to him. Perhaps I could put it this way in terms of trying to get at his better attitude in the thing. He opposes the attitude that would run from the body too much into the spirit. Because we assume that the body and its energies are evil. He opposes that attitude. but not because the assumption that the body is evil is wrong, you see. He tends to continue to say that that assumption is right, but that we should make a compromise with the evil of the body. That's the way in which his thought goes. See, he's opposed to the tendency to run away from the body and the limitations that it places on us and its drives and its instinctual energies and so on, to run away from that too much into the spirit. Perennial Christian temptation to despise the body because it is regarded as evil. Jung is opposed to that, but doesn't come down and talk about the assumption. The assumption is what's wrong, that the body is evil and its energies are evil and the unconscious is evil and so on and so forth. That's the problem. See, he grants the assumption and then says, make a compromise with evil. He grants the assumption that the body and its energies and its instinctual drives and so on are ipso facto evil, and then he says, make a compromise with evil. And then when you get, then you're into an undifferentiated treatment of this whole area of the reconciliation of opposites. From that point on, it becomes confused. And what needs to be done in opposition to that kind of tendency is to say that Jung has misplaced the problem of evil from the very beginning, that where evil lies is in the one-sided displacement of the tension of human existence in one direction or the other. We'll see this very clearly when we talk about Kierkegaard today, because he's very sensitive to the one-sidedness of either way of going. That's where evil lies, is in that one-sided displacement of the tension of human existence, either towards the body or towards the spirit, either towards limitation or towards transcendence. Go either way. And to choose a one-sided displacement is to choose what is evil. Now, not everyone who is caught in a one-sided displacement has chosen to be there. See, we are also victims of what's been done to us. And we emerge out of childhood with a certain disposition in one direction or another. But to choose the displacement, to fix oneself in it, is a choice for evil. Right, there's only one other thing that I want to say on last week's class, and that is to come back to the question that Greg Carruthers raised. Because I've been using the expression poised equilibrium between limitation and transcendence, the choice of that as good. Greg asked the question, is it possible for a person who is poised to be evil? And I need to qualify my response to the question a little bit more than I did in the last class. To be poised in the balance of limitation and transcendence the way we've described them is good. Or to choose or to want to move towards that poised equilibrium of limitation and transcendence in the way that I've tried to set that forth is good. And so to want that poised equilibrium, to want that acute tense unity of opposites is to want what is good, to want what is the truth of your humanity. But it is possible for a person to become poised in a displacement. Okay? You can become poised in a displacement. Colonel Kurtz in Apocalypse Now is poised in a displacement in this direction. In the direction of transcendence. He has simply said, I have made my pact with horror, and I am on this trip. And he knows, he seems to know, even though at that point he's mad, but he knows what he's done. So it is possible to become fixed in a displacement and to be very poised, very secure in it. But it's not in, not in the poise of those opposites that I've been talking about all along. Yes.
From another point of view, the same question then, is moral goodness implied in psychic health?
What you're coming to is the definition of psychic health and the way you understand psychic health. Because, well, this is another thing that I wanted to say with regard to this. A person can really be intending the poised equilibrium that I've been talking about and have an awful lot of difficulty staying in that balance. And yet what they're wanting and what they are making their efforts for is good. And still, they could be in psychological difficulties a good deal of the time. Nonetheless, they want to live the truth of their humanity. They want to incarnate the truth of their humanity. Coming at it from, your articulation of it, it's possible for a person to be at home with and comfortable with a hardened displacement in one direction or the other. I don't regard that as psychologically healthy, no matter how comfortable with it the individual may be, because it's not the truth of one's psyche. And yet, you may say, in looking at the person and getting to know the person, it doesn't seem to have any problem. It may very well be true. That one is not aware, at least, of the problem. Is no longer being destroyed by them. But one has already given way, I think, to moral self-destruction. He's made a pact with it. Okay? That's really all I wanted to do in terms of the review of last week. Is there anything that I didn't cover everything? All right, then let's move into the new material. The first thing that I want to do is to conclude the discussion of yoga. This would be, on the outline, this would be that last thing under the Jung number there, on ethical responsibility, position and counterposition in Jung. In some Jungian writings, both in his own work and in those of his students, disciples, there is a suspicion of ethical responsibility. It is suspected, it is disparaged, because of the way he has treated the question of good and evil. The good is regarded by, in these writings, as a one-sided displacement. And in our terms, it would be a one-sided displacement in the direction of transcendence, say, in the direction of the spirit. This kind of displacement is called good. And then, ethical responsibility is suspected and disparaged. See? Because ethical responsibility is understood as leading to this one-sided displacement. And so, there is a call in some of the writings to relinquish one's moral responsibility. There is a moral relativism in some of the Jungian writings. Following the argument. This is tricky. If the good is thought to be a displacement of, see, rather than the integration, the complementarity of spirit and matter in ourselves, if it is thought to be a displacement, then not only will the good be disparaged, but the ethical responsibility that seeks the good will be disparaged. And in place of ethical responsibility, moral relativism.
will emerge as the moral worldview.
Now, again, it is correct to disparage one-sidedness. It is erroneous to call that one-sidedness the good, or to call it ethical responsibility. It is correct to disparage the one-sided displacement. It is incorrect to call that one-sided displacement the moral good. The moral good is to find the truth of our humanity to be incarnate subjects, incarnate spirits, to want to be an authentic incarnate spirit, living in the in-between of limitation and transcendence. So again, Jung is correct, and those who follow him are correct in disparaging the one-sided displacement. They are incorrect, they are erroneous in calling that one-sided displacement good, and then saying good has to be counter-weighted by evil. At that point, you're into the moral relativism. You're into a position where there are no fundamental principles for human morality.
What is the moving principle then for Jung? I mean, he called it individuation in terms of achievement. What is it as a value?
Integration.
Deeper,
integration, wholeness, you see. And all of which I would agree with, except when you get to the point of the integration of good and evil. And then you've got the problem again. But it's the big problem in him is the misplacement of where good and evil lie. Good for me is, I think it's clear by now, is living in the in-between of the limitation and transcendence. And the evil is to go in the displacement in either direction, to choose the displacement in either direction.
Did Jung ever condemn a disintegrating force? Did he ever declare that to be an evil, even if he wouldn't have used the word?
A disintegrative force?
Yeah. Did he ever identify anything as being disintegrative, meaning opposed to what his real value is?
I'm sure he did. I can't locate anything now in terms of the question. Let me think about it. I can look at something. I mean, I know if he did, but I can't spontaneously relate to what you're asking.
Yes. Can you explain again why it was displaced in the direction of the spirit of the moral?
Oh, yeah, okay, good. To say to say that it is good, what I mean by good is to be overly spiritual. Be displaced in the direction of the human spirit. To say that that is what good means start with that. He says that that's what good means, huh? Secondly, if your value is integration, you're going to disparage the good because you've identified the good as being disintegrated. So you're going to disparage the good, and you're going to say you've got to make a compromise with evil in order to achieve integration. And it's that compromise with evil that is the moral relativism. You're going to cut out any fundamental principles of moral living, such as the ones that I use following Lonergan: be attentive, be intelligent, be rational, be responsible, be in love. You're going to relativize those. You're not going to give them the primacy that they deserve. So, or you can at least open the door to relativizing those fundamental principles of what it means to be a moral human being. Is that clear? Clearer?
Does Jung start with that presumption that you were trying to integrate them?
Yes, he does. And that's the fundamental presumption all the way through, which I don't disagree with at all. You see, I think we are trying to integrate body-spirit. And it's a tremendously delicate and difficult thing to do. We are trying all through our lives to achieve that integration, an ongoing, cumulative integration of body and spirit. But for me, it's that integration of body and spirit that is good. For Jung, the spirit is good and the body is evil. He agrees with that. But instead of taking the ascetical approach that he criticizes to that, you see, that therefore go with the spirit and reject the body, what he does is say, you gotta mix. All right, the spirit is good and the body is evil. You've got to mix good and evil with one another. The problem lies in calling the body evil to begin. That's where the he agrees with that. And then says we need to put good and evil together, you see, to reconcile good and evil. Because we do need to reconcile spirit and body. And we do. He's right on that. The problem is calling spirit good and body evil. What is good is the
conjunction,
integration of the two. That's what is what we do. Okay? It's tough. Keep pursuing until you got it. It's difficult.
Yeah.
Logic here.
Because the last run through seems simpler and it's more confusing to me. What does it add to his distinction between body and spirit to put the label good and evil on? Why isn't he talking about the same thing you are when you say, whether it be for a boy's equilibrium between body and spirit?
Yeah,
does the label add?
See, he would agree we're looking for a poised equilibrium between body and spirit, but he would say that means we're looking for a poised equilibrium.
Okay, but is evil any bigger than my body? What are we adding? We're calling good evil. Is it just a historical wolf?
You may be adding a certain personal agenda on Jung's own desire. I'm not sure. But possibly the agenda is there in his own development. Try to find some intellectually acceptable way of justifying a renunciation of moral responsibility. That's possible.
Well, he still has a new moral responsibility, doesn't he? His service of integration.
David Burrell pushes that point in his treatment of Jung in one of his books. But Jung never speaks of it that way. Because again, that would be kind of setting up a fundamental moral principle. And once it's still clear, that's it. That kind of knowledge. He wants to remain slippery, relativism.